There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pits of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is a dimension of imagination in an area which we call Elder Dragon Journey.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're live back again at the Elder Dragon Duel podcast. This is your host Igor, and is with me my co-host Aniksha. Say hi, Aniksha.
Hi. Wait, did Discord all drop it? I said hi. Yeah, hi.
And who is that voice in the background?
Hello, I'm Vince, also known as Peasant Kenobi on the internet, and I make videos about Magic the Gathering.
We're finally here. This has been, what, almost 2 months in the making, right?
Yeah. I've had a lot of unfortunate, all sorts of nonsense happening in my personal life, which has got in the way of magic stuff. So, yeah, it's been a long time coming.
Yeah, but it's really good to have you here. And what is up? How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Loving life. I'm currently just post having a tattoo. I'm drinking, as we've just been talking about, a very girly wine, I guess someone might describe it as.
I wouldn't call it girly, it's just not my kind of wine.
Yeah, I'm drinking a pink Pinot Grigio from California, just because I like sweet wines. And yeah, I'm in a pretty good mood. I haven't played any magic for about a day or two, so I'm itching to play some Modo tomorrow. But I'm good.
Well, speaking of magic, Aniksha, do you have a Commander of the Week or any pleasant magic tales?
Well, since our last recording, I actually didn't play any magic. So...
Since it was the day before yesterday?
Oh, so yeah. You both recorded very recently. It's not just that you haven't played
for a week. Yeah, we recorded Monday, but since you said you were okay to recording this week, we had to record it again.
Oh, I see. So you've recorded two weeks worth?
Oh, some of that, but we're going to release it ASAP.
Ah, okay. Cool.
So, Aniksha, no magic for you. You played some Commander today,
yeah,
if I saw correctly.
I played a game of... I played a game with Carador, and the only, like, funny moment
was...
Oh,
yes, I love some Carador. Let's talk Carador.
So the only moment to report is that we were playing in four players, and one of the guys had, what's he called? Hazazon Tamar.
Oh, Hazazon Tamar, he's awesome.
Who? Hazazon Tamar, what's that?
The guy from Legends, he's Tree and Naya. When he comes into play, you get... Actually, no. When he comes into play, you get a trigger. On your next upkeep, you get X11 Sand Warrior tokens, where X is the number of lands you can draw.
He's the guy that makes Sand Warriors.
Yes.
Yes. I can picture the text box, just not the name.
Are they Dune Warriors or Sand Warriors?
Yeah.
Okay. And so he got out a Purphoros, which we exiled. And then he got another Hazazon trigger. And I was like looking, okay, guys, we're going to die next turn. That's like a given because he put in the green guy that draws for every green creature you have. And he drew like 30 cards off of it.
Is that Soul of the Harvest or is it the other one?
No, it's Regal Force.
Regal Force, that's the one. Okay.
So his Regal Force drew him half of his deck, and we were like, okay, yeah, we're pretty much dead next turn. And I was like, yeah, I have 8 mana, so I can't win next turn because I have Primal Surge, which basically wins me the game. And then I look at the top card, I have 0 cards in hand because I counter the spell use, the artifact that dumps your hand to counter a non-creature.
Null Brooch,
yeah. And
oh, wow.
I look at the top card, and it's like, it's Primal Surge. I was just talking about, yeah, I can't win with Primal Surge, and then I draw Primal Surge. And I'm like, okay. So, yeah, that's...
I've never seen this Null Brooch before.
Null Brooch is a 4 mana artifact.
Yeah, I've just looked it up. It's... Yeah, go on. You should probably explain it to the audience at home.
They pretty much know. So it's a 4 mana artifact that for 2, discard your hand and tap to counter a non-creature spell.
Which in Carador is actually quite good, because you get to ditch all the stuff in your hand and recast it later, or remill yourself, or unburrowite stuff, so, like, it's not actually that big a downside in Carador.
It's not, because your graveyard is your hand.
Yeah, exactly. Like, So I played a bit of Caradore in a couple of videos for One Ticket Commander. So it's a format that we started playing quite a bit of on the channel with some friends. And it's where you make the deck for less than $1 on Modo because it's so cheap. And I made Caradore for less than $1. And the deck was awesome. It's disgusting at times because it outvalues most other decks because you just, like I said, you unburrow like silly things like Sepulchral Primordials and Abhorrent Overlords and Trastodons. Have all the fun.
Yeah, I play a different kind of Caradore. It's a 99 card combo Caradore because.
So what's your combo then?
I play Primal Surge. That's the combo. The rest of the deck is just permanent.
One card combo.
One would say a one card combo. I call it a 99 card combo because you have to, you know, make certain cuts so the deck actually works.
Yeah, yeah. So you put your whole deck into play, then what?
Basically, the prime way to finish it is to sacrifice everything to that vampire. You know that vampire, the white
Vishkal.
Black Vishkal. Yeah, sacrifice right. Everything to Vishkal, and then sacrifice Vishkal to Jarrod.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Killing people with Jarrod is pretty fun. I do like Jarrod. Jarrod is good.
Yeah, this is the type of decks Nixia usually plays. It's all weird, all wonky, and a lot of cards people have to pick up and read twice.
So you don't have any... What removal do you have on an all-permanent deck, though? Are you playing things like Spine of Ishars and similarly low-costed variants of that? Or
well, I have
Shriekmaw, I guess?
I have a couple of Planeswalkers. I have to put in the Chupacabra. I just haven't found time to do it yet.
Okay.
I have
So yeah, I guess walkers are pretty good for that, aren't they? They can key up as a removal as well.
Yeah, yeah. There's also that one creature that you can pay 4, tap it, and discard 2 cards to basically do a Wrath of God.
Okay, so you got spell. What are they called? Spell shapers.
Yeah, I can't remember his name. He's legendary. Do you remember Igor?
Magenta the Lion, isn't it?
Yeah, Magenta the Lion. Magenta.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Because some of the spell shapers are really good in Caradore. But in the one ticks version, where like your fixing and your ramp is kind of finite because things like Soul Ring are automatically banned because they're too expensive. So I was playing like Green Seeker, which is like a 1/1 for 1 that for green and 1 taps to discard a card and touch it over a basic land. So you discard your big fatties to reanimate and go get your lands to fix your colours. So stuff like that. So spell shapers tend to be pretty good in Caradore. But so do other than that lion then, do you have any instant speed way to interact with the board?
If somebody's going at me with everything they have, I have an angel that's 7 mana, instant speed, and
angel
you exile
hours.
All attackers.
Angel of what?
Angel of Dire Hours.
Yeah.
Wow, these are some obscure cards I don't think I've ever played with.
I have basically most of the gather in my head, so I can name these things off the top of my head.
I see. Oh, it is a commander-only card. Right, so it wasn't in the set then. Right. I was going to say, if it was an angel from a modern set, I thought I'd know it, but... Okay, and, so you have got some instant speed stuff.
Yeah, some. And through playtesting, I found that that Eldrazi, Distended Mindbender, is actually really good in Caradore, because you can actually emerge it from your graveyard.
So, for the people at home, what does that do?
So, Distended Mindbender is a 5... it's 8 mana, so 8 generic mana, for a 5/5 Eldrazi that says when he enters the... Actually, when you cast it, you look at target player's hand and you exile a card with that costs 4 or more and a card that costs 3 or less.
It's non-land though, right? If I can remember correctly,
non-land.
You can't get lands
yeah.
with it. Yeah.
And
its emerge cost is like 6, is it? Or
emerge
is 7?
Cost is 5 and double black.
Right.
And you can actually use the emerge cost from your graveyard.
Oh, you can cast emerge cards with Caradore's ability?
Yeah. Igor, are you trying to say something?
Nope, I was being quiet.
Your microphone was making a lot of noise there. I guess you'll cut that bit out, I guess, right?
Yep.
Okay, I'll go back to what I was saying. Just realized from what you just said that you can cast emerge costs from the graveyard.
Yes, because they say that you can cast the card by paying its emerge
cost.
Sweet,
okay. I've never realized that, so I might actually have a look at the emerge card that Caradore infused. Just for, because I guess Distended Mindbender is probably only a couple of pence, right? So I'd probably fit into one tick commander.
Yeah, it's like a couple of cents here. And now, like, in my local game shop, where we pretty much follow the prices, I can get him for, like, less than 10 cents.
It's a throw-in, basically.
Exactly. There you go. Sweet. I've got some new tech for my Caradore deck and one ticket EDH.
Haha.
So that's about it for me.
Yeah.
Do you have something, Igor?
Well, I was playing a bit, a couple of games before I actually met up with you. And there was one this girl in my deck that was doing a hell of work. I just got her the original Linvala.
Oh, God. Yeah, let's talk about Linvala, because I love me some original Linvala.
Basically, the guy tutored for the Loyal Retainers. Well, he had Elish Norn and something else in the graveyard. But he didn't have enough mana to cast. I was like, okay, I have just one turn to do something about this. I top deck. Oh, it's Linvala. Play it. All right. The guy gets to his turn again. Goes to sacrifice the retainers, but nope.
Yep. So can't do it. Cannot do it. Do not pass go. Do not collect £200. It's really satisfying as well, isn't it, to wag your finger and be like, sorry, you actually can't do that.
That's what my deck basically does. It's Alesha, Death and Dax.
Oh, the red, yeah, Alesha, the red reanimator, the three drop brings back.
Yeah.
Two power creatures, is it?
Two power creatures, yes.
I've been trying to play on D&T in Modern a little bit, and I think I'll probably make a video for it on the line with that, because you can bring back, like, ridiculous cards. You can bring back, like, Kiki Cheeky, you can bring back Cat Jesus, you can bring back Pian Kia's One-Stop the Shop, you can bring back Blade Splicers, you can bring back Fulminator Mage, so you can make a Fulminator Mage, blow up the land, next turn, attack, bring it back, blow up the land.
Yes.
She is sweet. And the fact that she's a 3-2 first striker is actually pretty good as well. So when you've got a Blade Splicer token and her in play, you tend to be able to block most effects in the format as well. So I think she's got a space in Modern. It's just making the deck around her to work. So she might be one of those cards that I try a bit more in, like, red-white taxes in Modern as well. I think she's got that room, that scope.
And speaking of your favorite boy, Leonard Arbiter, made an appearance in that game.
Oh, do you play him in Commander?
Definitely.
You animal.
I told you I'm playing Death and Taxes in Commander.
Are you playing Suppression Field as well?
Not yet. I'm trying to find space for it.
Yeah. Because once you've got like an Arbiter, a Suppression Field, and Linvala in play, all their fetches cost 4 mana. None of their mana work. Their Planeswalkers cost mana.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
The other day, actually, I played Linvala and Grand Abolisher at the same time. And I managed to come to the stall people long enough so I could play the Murderous Ratcap and Anapenza combo.
What deck was that?
Still in Alesha. Because I'm playing Death and Taxes, I can't win the usual Death and Taxes route most of the time just by punching people in the face.
Sorry, yeah. So red cap, and so how are you keeping the counter off? Solidarity?
How am I keeping what?
The counter off of the red cap. Because you said you red cap comboed them, yeah?
Yeah, but with Anapenza, the...
Oh, Anapenza, sorry. Yeah. I was trying to think what you replaced the green part of that combo. Of course, Anafenza. Yeah, that makes sense.
Anafenza.
Sweet. Exactly, it's like Viscera Seer or an Altar of...
Altar of Dementia, Goblin Bombardment.
Sweet.
Because I can't win most of the time with the usual route of just punching people in the face.
Yeah, of course.
I have the Umezawa Jitta and things like that.
You do play Stoneforge, yeah?
Of course. Because it has the good power and toughness to get it back from the graveyard, to get it with the Recruiter of the Guard.
Sweet. You need to play Recruiter as well. Do you have an Imperial Recruiter in there?
Oh, not yet.
How much are they these days?
100 and...
Still?
50-ish, I think. Maybe a bit less.
That's insane that they're still so expensive.
Dollars in...
I've stopped up yet. $162 TCG average.
Yeah, but you can get it for like £90, I think.
Yeah, but that's still obscene, isn't it? Considering the card is just... And that's the Judge promo. The non-Judge promo, apparently, is TCG is 234.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the Judge promo because A, it's black bordered, and I hate white border.
But the white bordered one is uncommon. It's a $234 uncommon.
It doesn't mean anything because it was printed in such stupid low amounts.
Yeah, exactly. Is it reserve list? Is Three Kingdoms part of reserve list?
No, it's not.
Oh, okay. So they could reprint it in M25, for example.
Oh my god, that would be so
good. That'd be so good, wouldn't it? I'd love it. We'll come to that later again.
I would buy the living crap out of that set.
Well, Mana Drain was like a $100 card, wasn't it?
Yeah, now it's like less than 50.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe Imperial Recruitment is time. The time has come.
Oh, that would be so great. Now you got me hyped for the set, by the way.
We'll come to that in a moment, yeah? We'll talk more about it.
Yeah. But that was basically a couple of my moments. I managed to text people, didn't win those games in the shop, but I did win that game when I comboed out. So that's the thing. Did you have any Commander or similar games?
I haven't played much Commander lately. I haven't played any Commander for about a year, so I've just literally messaged some guys today to get together for some more videos for the channel for some one-ticket Commander. I've played a bit of Modern with some really silly decks. So I've been playing what I currently call Creative Tokens, which is a red-white tokens deck with things like Spectral Proc and all that nonsense to make just 1/1s. And then you play the Kaladesh card Indomitable Creativity. Are you aware of that card? So it's red, 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 X. And then you have X creatures. You polymorph them. So what the deck does is it plays all token creators, including Elspeths and Gideons, and Assemble the Legion. And you play one Emrakul and one Xenagos of the God of Revels. So the idea is that for 5 mana, you can turn one shot of Lingering Souls into a Xenagos and Emrakul and just kill them out of nowhere.
Wow.
So that's going to hopefully be a video. But I was playing a white, red, black version splashing green for Cryptolith Rites. And that version was really bad because I kept drawing 4 copies of Cryptolith Rites and couldn't win a game because of like quite bad luck as well. So I've honed it back to red, white. And hopefully I'll get to either play a really fair tokens game with like a tier 2.5 deck and randomly combo kill people with like a 30-30 Emrakul. So that's what I've been doing a little bit this week. I've been playing Pauper as well. I've been playing Acid Trip in the blue-white deck.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
Yeah, that deck is really sweet. That's another one I've got some footage for. I just don't know if that'll be the next video or not yet. So I don't have the time to edit it up and start writing scripts and stuff. But Acid Trip is really fun because it's like the purest version of blue-white control in Pauper, but you don't play reactively. You play tap-out control where you're slamming things down like Seagate Oracles and like Acid Trips and stuff. So yeah, the deck is sweet. The deck is sweet. So that's what I've been playing. A bit of Modern and a bit of Pauper. And I'm about to start gearing up for a lot of Legacy playtesting for GP Madrid as well.
That's not the Pauper deck I will be playing, but you know, that's just my taste.
What do you play in Pauper?
Like I recommended you months ago, the 100 card Mythical Teachings deck.
Yes, I love Mystical Teachings.
The point isn't that you win the game. The point is that your opponent doesn't actually win the game with anything. You just watch the light in their eyes shutting down.
So you're playing the Pauper equivalent of Lantern Control.
You're playing actually more something similar to Sphinx's Revelation deck. You're killing stuff, drawing cards, drawing cards, killing stuff, and that's just
Sphinx's
that's...
Revelation is in my top 5 cards of all time. Like I need to play that. That just makes me so happy when you use Sphinx's Rev for 5, 6, 7, or 8. The sum total of happiness in that game goes up, but on one side of the field anyway. The other side goes down, and on your side it goes up, because you're just having all the fun, drawing all the cards, playing all the magic.
No, you continue.
I actually really enjoyed that standard time of Sphinx's Revelation.
You did or didn't?
I did, and I never was the one doing this in Sphinx's Revelation, but I never actually minded.
So what were you playing in that standard period then?
I'm glad you asked. Now, here's a story. So, Ravnica Innistrad was, I think my second favorite standard era ever. So my first favorite was, the original Ravnica, because I just started playing and everything was just amazing.
Right.
So
was Watch Wolf a staple of standard during original Ravnica?
Yes. So was Mr. Tickles.
Mr. Tickles, what the hell's that?
Mr. Tickles is Giant Solifeu, the 2 and green red. So it's a hybrid. So for 4 mana, it's a 4/1 trample, haste, shroud.
Oh right. Yeah.
And at that time, that was a staple together with Char. And Burning Tree Shaman.
But it's just an interesting like format where like a 3/3 for 2 was okay. That was perfectly good enough. Do you know what I mean? Like how far we have come, right?
Well, 3/3 for 2.
Because then fast forward
absurd.
To the standard you were just talking about where you've got like a 2-mana 3/3 that could become indestructible and hexproof and put counters on itself with Feastmane Lion and Theros Block.
Yeah.
Power creep, man. Power creep. But anyway, sorry, you were saying how much you love Ravnica and Return to Ravnica.
So in the Return to Ravnica Innistrad block, I played I was contemplating what to actually play. I had the legendary zombie, the one that kills stuff when he attacks.
Grim Grin.
Grim Grin doesn't kill stuff when he attacks, does he?
He does.
Oh, he does. He does.
Oh, I was picturing Thraximundo when you said that.
No. Grim Grin.
No, he does. Yeah, you are completely. Sorry, my apologies. Yeah, he kills stuff when he attacks. God, that card is sick.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't really make up my mind what to play, like blue-black, green-white, something with red. So I just decided to play it all. And since I'm already playing it all, why restrict myself to 60 cards? And then I went up to 115 cards.
Right.
Okay.
Battle of Wits was in one of those core sets, wasn't it?
Battle of Wits was, but that's another deck, but that deck wasn't actually successful. So this is more like a half-wits deck, because I played half of what I would play in
Did you have any success playing 100-plus cards?
Yes, because one of my main combos was... one of my often plays that I made, because, you know, Master Mule was quite powerful then, so I could get to late game, was you slam in a Gristlebrand, you draw some cards, you draw Enter the Infinite and Omniscience among them, you play an Omniscience, you draw your whole deck, you put in Borborygmos Enraged, and since you have about 50 extra lands in the deck, you just toss them all at your opponent's face.
So you're playing a very, very slow version of Grishelbrand.
Well, there's also an alternate win condition in Door to Nothingness, or you can just completely outvalue everyone by playing Deadeye Navigator and pairing him with anything.
Standard pairing was so good. When you list out the cards you just listed, Grishelbrand, Deadeye Navigator, Thragtusks, like Door to Nothingness, and they were all playable as well.
Well, there was actually a deck, Omnidor Thragtusk, yeah. I also played the Havengul Lich. He was an MVP couple of times.
Oh, yeah, Havengul Lich combo as well? That was the thing?
No.
I played Havengul. That set or the format
before? I actually played Havengul Lich to cast an opponent's, Angel to untap Gristlebrand.
Yeah. That was the standard season. In that standard season, I played, Junk Reanimator with, Unburial Rites. And you get to play Acidic Slimes, Restoration Angels, Thragtusks, and Angels of Sanctity? Serenity?
Yes.
Serenity.
Serenity.
And you get to put your own Thragtusk under it. So if they killed your 5/7 you'd made on turn, you just get to get a Thragtusk and a Restoration Angel back to hand. That deck was... And then you played Critterhoof. You played a one of Critterhoof, and you played Lingering Souls. Like, I'm listing just loads of powerful cards, and then you just, like... And you'd play like an Avacyn's Pilgrim, you'd cast Lingering Souls, cast Lingering Souls, cast Lingering Souls. They can't remove all the Lingering Souls. They don't want to use their Tragic Slip on one Lingering Soul. And then you just, that turn, you cast Grisly Salvage, you mill Cradle up into your bin, reanimate them, and suddenly your opponent's like, oh, it's too late, I'm dead. Like, oh, that format was so good.
It was.
Flickering Thragtusks in Standard was the best.
Oh,
so basically you were playing Commander, is what you're trying to say.
Well, kind of, but it was like, Kinda. Like, I feel like that deck could have legs in Modern a little bit. Like, it would be top tier, but maybe I should do that. Maybe I should play a deck in Modern a little bit.
Let me tell you something. Once I was stopped being completely insane, and we had an actual WMCQ, I made a Bant deck that was basically, like, good stuff dot deck, and one of my favorite combos was use Alchemist Refuge to blink in Angel of Serenity, pair it with Deadeye Navigator, target three targets, and in response to that target, you blink the Angel to permanently exile them.
Oh, sick. So you can get rid of all of their like creatures in their play or things in their bin permanently, yeah?
Yes. So, yeah, that was like... I just love Deadeye Navigator. He was so powerful, actually.
Everyone loves Deadeye Navigator until someone plays against Commander.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, now it's Deadeye Navigator in play with an Acidic Slime and no one gets to play any more magic. Igor, you mentioned about just playing Commander. That reminded me that actually there was another... I played quite a bit of magic at GP London. So I went to London back in January, end of January, and I played a lot of Legacy. And I played quite a bit of D&T. I just had a lot of 2-1s or 2-0-1s where you draw the last round and go on to the next tournament. But my last Legacy game on the Sunday, our last Legacy round, tournament on Sunday, was a 3-round tournament where I played Abzan Nykvit. And in my Nykvit list, I was playing Gitrog Monster.
Oh my god.
And I was playing Excavator. So against one poor D&T player, I played a fetch land, sacked it, drew a card, got a dual land, played the fetch land out of my bin, sacked it, drew a card, got a dual land, and then just cast Huntmaster. No, not Huntmaster, sorry. Master of the Wild Hunt, are you aware of that card?
Of course I am.
Yes, the 4-mana, a 3-3 that makes a 2-2 every turn, and then can tap to make all those 2-2s fight target creature. So at one point, I won a game where I have to navigate not letting the opponent gain any life so I can kill him on the crackback next turn. And he has a Battleskull in play, and a Flicker Wisp with a Jitte in play. And the and a Sword of Fire and Ice on the Flicker Wisp as well. So you've got all three equipment in play. So what I have to do is I play Liliana of the Last Hope, down ticket on the Flicker Wisp to shrink it down. Then I have to block the Battleskull token with my Wolf, and then mid-combat activate to throw the Wolf at the Flicker Wisp to kill it and shoot it out of the air. And therefore he gains no counters during combat and gains no life from the Battleskull, and next turn I just hit him for three and kill him. And it was sick, and it felt like a game of Commander, and my opponent was just like, what are these cards? Why are you playing them in Legacy? And yeah, I love Legacy. Legacy, Nick Fit, yeah.
Well, apparently it works in Legacy.
Yeah, exactly. I did pretty well. I beat a Burn player by him to Turoking him and then Cabal Therapying the last card away, forcing him to use the spells that he had in his hand at the time because he got 2 untapped lands. And it was really complex because he could shoot me for 2 bolts and then Fire Blast me, which is like 10 damage in one turn. But at the end of it, he had no cards left in hand. And I just play a Scooze and see if I can get there. And it was... Legacy's the best. I love Legacy. Well, anyway, that's my story.
That was a long story, but it was a good story.
Just everyone likes Master of the Wild Hunt, right? He's like the epitome of value.
He's the cube staple of many, many cubes.
No, Igor, he's a Legacy staple. Now, I'm going to make it.
Okay, but it still isn't. You're going to make it.
Wolf Tribal Nick Fit. You got him, you've got Garrett Relentless that makes wolves, and you've got that copy of him to Turok that has a wolf in the art. So it's basically Whole deck's just Wolf Tribal.
That works. Just put in Handmaster somewhere in there and it'll work.
You can smash from a Nick Fix, you seem to get him out and all good.
Yeah, why the hell not? So basically, people, we just spoiled Vince's new video.
Well, yeah, I need to make a Nick Fit video at some point, or at least stream it, because Nick Fit's the one. I did Dino Nick Fit a little while ago, and that was...
Yeah, I was part of that stream.
Oh, yeah, because you show up for the streams and stuff, don't you? So, yeah, Dino Nick Fit was very fun. I mean, I think, yeah, we didn't, like, win out, and we didn't lose out. Okay, considering we're playing, like, standard Chase Rares in a Nick Fit deck, Legacy.
You play Carnage Tyrant in Legacy, that was a win.
Well, funnily enough, of all the, like, top 8 lists and stuff now on MTG Top 8, the only card from that Dino Nick Fit list that I was playing that's gone on to continue to see play is the Carnage Tyrant. Because there's a slot in Nick Fit where you play, like, a Sigarda, because Sigarda is really hard for Delver to deal with, because it can't be targeted with Dismember, it can't be bolted, it's bigger than all your creatures, you can't get it to be sacked. It's just, unless you're playing Deluge, Sigarda is just very, very good. But some people have started swapping it for Carnage Tyrant, because for 1 mana more, you get Trample and it's bigger.
That's the reason why, actually, Vintage old decks played in sideboards.
Is it in the sideboard of Oath decks now?
Yeah, some versions play it.
Oh, okay. Sweet. Oath decks are funny when they're playing Inferno Titans on turn 2.
Yeah, depending on the meta, what the meta says that should be played.
Yeah, it's cool. But Carnage Tyrant's just a very good magic card.
Yeah.
It hasn't lived up to the hype in standard yet, that's the problem.
I don't think it will.
I think post-rotation, we lose all... Well, what do we lose next? Do we lose energy next?
Yes,
fine. Yeah, so once energy rotates out, like, Dinosaur seems like the next slightly insidious, slightly incestuous, like, mechanic or collection of abilities that could make a deck, you know? So you can play your Dinosaur Haste enablers and your Dinosaur Cost Reduction things, and most of the dinosaurs are good, right? Like, Alphasaur, Registrar Alpha. That card is very good.
Also Galta.
Oh, but the one that has cost reduced power. Yeah, like you can play it on turn 4, like realistically.
Alright. Wanna move on to some other topics?
So where are we up to? What have we talked about so far?
Let's touch first at the Masters 25 spoilers that we got.
So Masters 25, is it?
We did touch it a long time ago on this podcast, when we started the show with you. But they have actually spoiled a couple of cards for the Masters 25. Niksha, want to take it out?
Sure. So one of the cards spoiled was, of course, Jace the Mind Sculptor, because he is actually one of the most powerful cards. The second most powerful Planeswalker ever printed.
Whoa. Who is more powerful than Jace? Gideon?
Tybalt, of course. Come on.
Oh, Tybalt. Okay. And then Gideon.
No. Gideon, Tybalt, then Jace.
So Tybalt, Jace, and then we get Gideon?
Sybil, Jason, and the rest of the world, who cares? They have the power.
Actually, who wins in a fight? If you have a Jace in a vacuum and you have an Elspeth Knight Errant, doesn't Elspeth win?
In a vacuum, maybe, but overall.
Yeah, Jace is weak. There's so many better walkers out there.
Yeah, like the first Garrett. I mean, he untaps two lands. Come on.
Yeah, but in a vacuum, you ain't got any lands, have you? All the walkers make 1/1s and 2/2s. So, sucks to be you, Jace.
I think Vince is correct. Everybody should get rid of their Jaces. I'm willing to make the sacrifice and take all of your Jace the Mind Sculptors because such a bad card.
I do think Jace has got so much hype around it that newer players and players that haven't played perhaps the standard that he was in or Legacy with him or even draft him in Cube, those players just see him as an insurmountable, like, absolute powerhouse. But in reality, like, if you are behind on board and you play a Jace, it doesn't mean you win. But players don't see it that
way. Yeah. It's not the magical I win button.
Yeah, exactly. All jokes aside, Jace is obviously an incredible magic card, but it still irks me how much people talk about how powerful he actually is. When there are other walkers, if we're serious, walkers like Liliana of the Veil, Last Hope, to an extent, Ally of Zendikar as well, because that guy is he's a beast. He's a beast of a magic card. Those cards can go toe-to-toe with him, but you can play on a board when you're behind and get back.
Also, Baby Jace, the one from Origins.
So what do you guys call him? Do you call him Baby Jace, yeah?
I'm not sure how to call
him. The naming convention is difficult, isn't it? Like, is it Baby Jace like, what, Bellerin?
In my mind, Baby Jace, because I'm an older Magic player, is Bellerin.
Yeah, exactly, but I see Bellerin as Party Jace or OG Jace, and then I see, like you said, Origins Jace is Baby Jace.
I'm not sure how to call it again, but the Rince Prodigy, basically, he's also really high up there.
He's very good, yeah, agreed, 100%.
Turns out looting is powerful, and giving your stuff flashback is also powerful.
Look at Kithian, he's a one-mana walker. He's unique.
He had so much hype behind him, and then nothing.
Well, Was he in one of the Pro Tour top 8 lists for one of the human lists?
I think he was, and then that generated a lot of hype, and then nothing.
No, I'm saying that the most recent one, that I... Yeah, yeah. Oh,
I don't
Mengucci.
Know.
Mengucci played a one-off Kithian main board. So there you go. Top 8 of the Pro Tour. How many walkers? Not many.
Of course Mengucci played it, because he plays things like Kalesha, and I think he played it in Legacy, actually.
So there you go. So in the current Pro Tour, top 8 in Modern, we saw 4 Liliana of the Veil, 1 Liliana Last Hope, and 1 Kithian. Well, 6 Liliana of the Veil.
Well,
sorry,
you see, I think
in
that,
the Traverse list as well.
I think that...
And 1 in the Mardu list. That's 8 or 7, whatever numbers are.
Well, I believe that the only reason this happened was that the Black-Red Hollow One didn't play Tybalt, and it could have.
Actually, you might be under something there, aren't you? Like, let's have a look. What does Tybalt do again? He, like, discards stuff.
he discards the card at random, yeah. Just like rest of the deck.
They love their random discards. Isn't Goblin Lore?
Yeah, if you don't have money for Goblin Lore, then you can use a Mythic Rare Planeswalker as a... You know, budget alternative.
A budget alternative to Goblin Lore. It's incredible. For the cost of 1 Goblin Lore, we will sell you 10 Tybalts.
The thing is, Nick Shakina has a lot of value in Tybalts because he has like 16 of them.
No, I don't have 16, I have 6 of them.
So before I made my scavenge video, I told a couple of my mates, and they, as a hedge, they bought like 40 copies of Varols, the Scar Strike on Modo. Oh,
he's cool.
Yeah, because when I made the Banefire video for Tron, Banefires went up by like 50, like, I think it was like 3 or 4 times their value. They went from being a penny to like 5 pennies. So they were like, whoa, we might as well get in at the ground. And that didn't, they now have a lot of roles and nothing to do with them.
Yeah, but my reason for Tybalt was completely different. I still want to do this. So my plan is to get, clear protectors from both sides. Get 75 Tybalts and use them as my card back for the deck.
Right. Is that even legal anywhere?
It should be. I mean, I don't see a reason why it shouldn't. Because I know of a story of a guy who had a double-sleeved deck, but his deck was abnormally fat, and when they checked it, he actually had a reminder card behind every card in his deck.
I think you're allowed to have reminder cards and stuff, but I do think a judge playing illegal magic cards. Well, Tybalt is borderline not legal, because has he ever put up a place in any top 8 deck ever?
Nope.
There you go, then. Not like my boy Kithian. Yeah. He's my boy. Anyway, I think we got sidetracked, didn't we, about N25.
Yeah, so, except for Jace, we are also getting an Azusa Lost But Seeking with the Judge foil art.
Yep.
So
much needed, because
nice.
The cost of her was getting a bit obscene.
And another guy whose cost is obscene but sees almost zero play whatsoever is Phyrexian Obliterator.
Yep. I mean, go on, Eagle.
Phyrexian Obliterator is one of the biggest victims of the said Jace the Mind Sculptor. Because when he was in Standard, Obliterator was in a good position to do something, but the Mind Sculptor existed. And he was just saying, no, sir.
So Phyrexian Obliterator was the first card I ever sold on eBay.
Oh.
There you go. There's a bit of history or something. I don't know. I went on a girlfriend, Isle of Wight or Somerset or somewhere like very English and boring. I bought one pack of new Phyrexia and opened up a Spellskite and a foil Phyrexian Obliterator. And I sold the foil of Phyrexian Obliterator at the peak of his standard hype at like £30, I think it was. Don't know. There's a little story for you. Not that exciting, but it's true.
There we go.
But isn't Obliterator a cool magic card?
He's the best.
Like the fact that like he's an Obliterator, right? He's like one of the essential or like most powerful Phyrexian like weapons that they would unleash during a battle. So he should be scary, like a Carnifex in Warhammer. Yep. I don't know, meeting the mother-in-law. Anything like that should be absolutely horrifying. But when you actually look at the mechanics of it, he is horrifying. If you block him with anything other than a 1-1, or even a 1-1, you're going to lose a token. Like, the way his mechanics sort of translates to the idea that he is the blessed perfection, as the flame text says. Obliterator is a very well-designed card, and I love it.
His biggest opponent is 0-6 Wall.
Yes. So what 0-6 Walls can fight him? Is it Wall of Frost? That's a 0-7?
Oh, yeah. That really screws him over. Just no.
There you go. So when Phyrexian Obliterator rises to the top of the meta, it means that Fenax Walls and Doran the Siege Tower become the top like counterplay. Is that correct?
No. You have your 0-7. You fight it this way. You fight with your Phyrexian Obliterator. They block with their wall. You put hatred on the wall and pay like 15 life.
Is that modern legal?
No, but we're talking Commander.
Oh, so, I apologize. But I'm sorry. You know I'm so obsessed with modern legacy.
You know what is modern legal?
It's pretty funny though. If they go Phyrexian Obliterator attack, you block with your wall. They're like, okay, no responses, and they cast like Invigorate. Although you cast Invigorate on their guy.
Yeah.
And they gain 4 life, but sack 4 permanents? 5 permanents?
That's what I'm saying, hatred. Pay like 10, 15, 20 life. So you're gonna lose all this permanents.
It's like High Priest of Penance, isn't it? The white-black 1-1 from Dragon's Maze or Gatecrash, which says, when this dealt damage, sack a permanent. And that card, to me, I always thought, oh, that card would be really... And whenever I read that card must be good somewhere. But in Cube and Commander, I can never get it to do anything because it's just like a little baby Obliterator. It's not as good.
I wish I had it a couple of years ago when I was just starting with Alesha. It would be a cute thing to have and do, but this list can no longer run it. It's too tight.
Also, quadruple black in a 3-color deck.
No. I'm talking about the High Priest of Penance.
Oh, Penance. Yeah, of course. Well, no, because that's sick because you can recur it with Alesha.
Yeah, but... I don't see much D&T potential out of it, that's the thing.
Well, it makes them sack stuff.
Yeah, but it doesn't hate enough. But it needs to be damaged.
Maybe you need to put, like, smokestacks and stuff into your list and then play it with High Priest Dependence?
No need, actually. I'm just playing Armageddon and things. No need for
smokestacks. Even better, play a smokestacks, cast Armageddon, put a Priest Dependence and Obliterate into play. Your opponent's not having much fun, meanwhile you're... laughing your way to the bank.
I think I don't want to be single anytime soon, so I don't think I'll do that. My girlfriend really, she hates Armageddon, but she would hate Smokestacks much more unless she's playing her Prosh.
What does your girlfriend play?
She plays Prosh, Saskia, and the dinosaur that gets you more dinosaurs when it hits people.
Oh, okay. The epic legendary dinosaur.
So you're seeing a pattern with her decks.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, so M25 for Commander then, like, obviously, Azusa is quite a good... Do you guys play Azusa?
I don't have any Azusas, but I would.
Yeah, exactly. It's better than that crappy Swordtooth rubbish in the new standard set.
Yeah, Nixxia has or had the Judge promo, Azusa.
Yeah.
Were you playing her as a commander, or were you playing her?
No, but I did play against an Azusa commander.
She's really good, like obscenely
good. It was miserable.
Because when they play her on turn three, they always, 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 for the next two land drops, play like a Soul Land and a Lotus Vale. Without fail. They never just play two forests. They always play like five manas worth of lands. And you're like, well, this game is over.
Honestly, I've seen some Azusa lists, but Azusa isn't scary in mono green as something like Yisan is.
I don't know, buddy. Like, Yisan is sick. Don't get me wrong. I love myself some Yisan. I've played him in Legacy before, like in Green White Taxis and stuff. But like, Azusa decks can just get so close, so up there with a Green Sun Zenith. But it's not Green Sun Zenith. Sorry, a Genesis Wave. So early.
Yeah.
Like, Genesis Wave for 7 on like turn 4, and you're like, oh man.
The problem with Azusa is she's really hit and miss.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's probably the case with any green deck. Collection early on is quite weak. But once you get there and you start playing Planeswalkers and like Souls of the Harvest and Green Sun Zeniths and all that sort of nonsense, you get there.
Actually, the deck I played against was more focused on, you know, destroying and denying lands than on ramping out.
So, yeah, so the so yeah, exactly. So you play Azusa on two, right? You can play the big old ramp deck, which is very fun, but it gets boring fast. Or you play like a literal lands list, because in Commander, Caracas is banned, but Tabernacle isn't it? Is it?
Yeah, Tabernacle.
Not just that. So one of the
you play all the lands tech, don't you?
But one of the most horrible things I've seen her do is use that artifact that says that whenever a land is tapped for mana, return it to its owner's hand.
Storm Cauldron.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
And that's horrible. It's horrible because you tap your lands, you get them back, you can play one. They tap their lands, they don't care. They can play them all back.
That sounds like stacks to me.
It's horrible. And their Horde of Greed is a lot better than, your
Horde
of Greed.
Yeah, yeah, because you've Azusa, Exploration, Horde of Greed, and that, and you're off to the races.
It's horrible. Also, that was a time when Sundering Titan wasn't banned.
That was a good time.
You say good. I mean...
Look, Vince, there is this thing that I hate that people have in Game of Magic, and that's called lands or mana.
I mean, I can agree with that. I love... is Deadeye Navigator. So a lot of cards could probably stay off the ban list and be okay if they didn't have Deadeye. Because when someone plays Sundering Titan and pairs it with a Deadeye Navigator, you're not playing Magic anymore. You're just all, like, writing miserable poetry about how bad life is.
Honestly, Sundering Titan is all bad on its own. Doesn't need help of the Navigator.
No, because what happens is when it comes into play and you blow up, you know, five lands,
yep,
then everyone has to agree not to destroy it. It's like the UN. It creates a peace treaty and people have to be nice about it. The political aspect of that card is great. And then what happens is someone clones it.
Yes.
And then someone reanimates it. It's just like, you know, like Prime Time. The game does become about that card.
Yeah.
But Deadeye Navigator, I do, as much as I always put in a blue list in EDH, it is a problem.
There is one good way to counter, actually, the Sundering Titan. Play Blood Moon.
Yes. Also, or play Torpor Orb. The amount of people get pissed off when you play Torpor Orb in Commander. Because, a nice Mole Drifter you've got there for a 5-mana 2-2. Like, you know.
I'm playing both Toctali Honor Guard and Hushman Griff in my Alesha list.
That is sweet. That is where you should be at. Stop everyone else from doing anything.
People are reliant on ETBs so much in this format, and it's really nice to shut it down.
So, like, my favourite variant of basically Commander decks is, like, with Caridor, all my creatures have ETBs. With Rafik, which is one of my most famous or favourite commanders, I play Karmic Guides, Revel Arc of the Battlefield, but I play Flickerwist, Stoneforge Mystics, all that sort of nonsense, Eternal Witnesses, Mole Drifters. So, yeah, like, I would get shot hard out of a game of Magic in Commander if people were playing Hushman Griffs and Torpor.
I should actually send you my list so you can see what all the things I'm playing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you're up for it, we could probably look at seeing if you want to put it through some like a one Commander League online and pile it together and have a look at that. So we should definitely do that.
Yeah, sure. But let's get back to the topic at hand. What else can we expect in Masters 25? Some predictions?
Well, definitely not a skeleton.
Aww.
Is there a reason you want skeleton chip?
Well, just to get it, like, to frame, to be able to get it foil.
It's a pirate. He likes pirates.
It's not the pirate, it's a ship.
Is its price really high up now, thanks to the pirate hype?
No.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I actually haven't checked in a long time.
Right, I'm off to teach you player. One second, guys. I'm having a look.
It shouldn't be. It's
still a bad card.
It's definitely a bad card.
Yeah, but don't underestimate pirate hunt. Are you guys aware of what happened?
Oh, yes, we are.
The pirate stompy in Legacy, where everyone started playing all the pirates.
That's actually how I found out about you.
Oh, when I blow up Julian, when I wrecked Julian Nard playing out. Yep.
That is wonderful.
So for the friends at home and viewers, the skeleton ship is only 6. So, I mean, I was expecting to be less. I thought it was an absolute junk rare, other than the meme element of it. But yeah, so at least it hasn't exploded. Do you guys know off the top of your head skeleton ship's flavor text, who it's by?
No, Nixon should maybe.
The flavor text is the sea gives up her dead as easily as the soil. Who do you think said that? Famous magic character.
Limdul.
Oh, I nailed it! Did you look that up, or did you know that?
I know that because I play with
it. There you go. Yeah, it's Limdul the Necromancer. Oh, I'm impressed.
You can see two different tensions with Nixia and me. I play Armageddon, Nixia plays Skeleton Ship.
I mean, Skeleton Ship has... I'm sorry. It has skeletons. It has skeletons, riding flying turtles.
Also, it's got dolphins in the art as well.
Yes.
Quite a rarity in magic. Thing is, I thought Nixia was the more competitive player of the two of you. He's here, rocking the skeleton ship there.
Oh no, he is in non-commander format.
Okay, yeah, I don't like competitive commander. I just don't.
Yeah, it does harm some of the charm.
I mean, if your whole group is okay with competitive EDH, then it's great. If two people are up for the competitive EDH but two aren't, that's bad.
Yeah, you have to find the right playgroup that wants to get involved at the same level that you do. Yeah, otherwise you get the ridiculous arms races, people buying cards, other people not buying cards, and that's one of the fun. As much as Commander is a great format, it has that inherent flaw that you have to find the people who have the same mentality that you do.
Yeah, and I managed to find the good group, and I'm happy with it, so I don't have to bring my Alesha to molest people at the shop with. But to their credit, the shop has started actually to ramp up with their decks. They're getting actually better. Because a couple of months ago, they were at pre-con level.
Because that's the thing, because you're saying, like, you know, you don't like competitive Commander, but you're playing Armageddon.
I'm not completely at CEDH level. I'm somewhere between, you know, 90% and competitive EDH. I'm in that limbo.
Are you playing Cataclysm as well?
Not yet, but I plan to get it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that card's more fair than Armageddon in some ways. Keep one hand.
Yeah, but I'm not searching for fair, that's the thing.
But no, I'm being sarcastic. When everyone's got a stack down, one artifact, one enchantment, and you happen to keep, like, Rafik of the Many, Sword of Fire and Ice, of Shardenpaw and something else, and then you play one more land.
Yeah.
That's good magic.
Anywho, predictions, besides the skeleton ship obviously being reprinted.
No, it can't be reprinted. That's the problem.
They will abolish the reserved list just for this.
Sure.
So they've said, haven't they, that there's going to be one card every set, excluding reserve list?
Yes, excluding reserve list. Besides skeleton ship.
So that makes it interesting because I don't think, like, what card from, like, Cold Snap and what card from, like, other random sets like that.
Let me just get my worm album, and I'll tell you what cards from every set they can print.
By the way, Nixia has a worm album, and he plans to collect each and every worm that was ever printed.
That's cool. I can appreciate that.
So yeah,
people we collect dragons. He collects worms
from Alpha.
And
Nixia
is
crab worm.
Which is about never having a legendary worm general.
So the thing is, right? What? Let's talk first of all about poster cards, because we can guess all sorts of random, right? But what are the poster cards? So like in Modern Masters 2015, they reprinted Tarmogoyf, and they put Kiki and Dark Confidant, Valyrian Clique, Iona, and like cards of Bitter Blossom and Elish Norns and stuff. What do we think are the cards that will sell the set? Because earlier on, was it before we started recording that? We're talking about the... We weren't recording at that point, right?
We were not.
Right, so, just to clarify before I went on one that we all talked about. So, like, Imperial Recruiter is currently a $200 card, or 180 or something in Judge Foil. And that's not reserve list, is that correct?
That is not reserve list.
So Imperial Recruiter would be a sweet sort of like mana drain style mythic that everyone's chasing to open.
Yep.
But that said, this is where Magic is weird, because there's not really any demand for Imperial Recruiter. Before, there used to be a rarity from an old set for collectors, and some people played a red-white variant of D&T and Legacy. Now, because we've got Recruiter of the Guard, thanks to Conspiracy 2, no one's really after the Red Recruiter anymore. Like, the other deck it was played in was probably Paint the Servant in Legacy, because since it's Divine Assault was banned, that deck's not very good either anymore. So is that a card that'll be like managed $200 now, and they print it, and everyone opens it, and the card will sell for like £10 on eBay, and everyone will be really bitter? Because that's one of the problems Iconic Masters had, wasn't it? That it crashed all the prices.
I wouldn't mind the crash of the price of that particular card.
No, I agree. That's probably a good thing, but it's just interesting that the reason people want it printed is because of its cost. They need to chase it for value, and then when they chase it for value, the card goes down inherently. It's just a weird sort of scale that's very hard to keep in check, right?
Yeah, but do you have any good reprints that might be in here?
So, I think Imperial Recruiter needs a reprint. I think Richard, that yep. card is $100 at the moment.
Yep. Yes, port would be nice, so actually more people can go into Legacy and play that deck.
Well, it's a card that people should have in Commander. It should be a utility land that costs you like 10, 20 quid at most, and you can have it to turn off people's Cabal coffers in their upkeep, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not. It's like $100 card, because Watsy haven't managed that card correctly. What else could they print?
Sneak Attack.
Sneak Attack? Well, Sneak Attack was in Eternal Master?
Yeah, yeah. It was.
Yeah, but so was Jace that, in some... So was he Jace, was in, so what?
Jace was in Eternal as well.
Yeah.
So, Eternal Masters did very well to sync in a good way. Because, like, our Mana Crypt went down dramatically, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Vampiric Tutor, that dipped quite significantly as well.
Also, card that really fell down in price because of all the printing is Necropole.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that was a card that demanded some sort of price for pretty much no reason.
I mean, the cube value and just the sheer infamy of the card was enough.
Wait a minute, is Necropotence legal in Commander?
Oh, it definitely is. I'm glad you asked.
That's crazy.
I'm definitely playing it in any black deck I can.
Yeah, like Mono Black should definitely play Necropotence, because that card is very good.
I'm playing this in Alesha, which is all about discarding. I'm still playing it.
So, I've got an interesting point for you. So, we're talking about reprint. I guess we're talking about certain areas. What is the one mythic you expect them to print that no one wants to open? So, in Modern Masters 2015, infamously, Cometstorm was a card you did not want to open. You could open Goyf, you could open Bob, or you could open Cometstorm. And in Eternal Masters, you can get Jace, Sneak Attack, Vampiric Tutor, or you can get World Gorger Dragon. So what do we think the mythic is going to be that no one wants to open?
Hmm.
Oh, this is a hard one.
Archangel's Light. Let's go with that.
What does that even do?
You don't remember that?
Weirdly, no.
From the best set of them all ever since Return. 7 mana, if I remember correctly. For a white sorcery, shuffle all cards from your graveyard into your library. You get 2 life for each.
I do know that card because I kept opening it. I think I still own like 6 that card because I won't put it in my bulk box. It just reminds me of what a hard time that period was. And it wasn't Avacyn's Restored. It was...
The Dark Ascension.
Dark Ascension, because at that point in time, Sorin, when it first... That's like first time, it was my first ever GP. Sorin was proper money. Like, you open a Sorin, it's 20 quid plus. And a Grave Crawler was £10 plus. And all I would open was Archangel Light's prize pack. And I was like, oh, stop it.
Now, so, imagine paying like $10 for a booster and opening that as your mythic.
So the thing is, they're not going to put that in one of these sets because it has no actual like applicable limited play. Like, Comet Storm was in MMA 15 as kind of like a... That's the thing, like, the mythic should be cards that aren't factored into the limited environment to an extent. But the reason that Comet Storm was in there was because it was bomb and limited. No one wanted to fucking open it, right?
Yeah, it's great and limited. If you're playing on a tournament, yeah, you're going to run that.
Yeah, so fun fact, I went to GP Utrecht Field GP, where people were dropping out before the event began because they'd opened like a foil Emrakul and a foil Goyf and didn't want to pass their pool on to another player because they'd opened absolute money. So at that event, people were just dropping out like mad. I played 4 rounds. I think I won. I lost to like Keith Jiki. What other mythics did I lose to? Khan. I lost to a Khan.
Wow.
I lost to another Kiki. Because Kiki isn't completely busted in Limited, but when they're copying, like, it might have been Moldrifter at the time and, like, other ridiculous value cards, you can't really win against that in Limited. So I lost to Kiki, Khan, and Kiki. I think I beat Cometstorm. But that, again, like, so I 4 rounds, I played against 4 different random mythics that were almost unbeatable. God, mythics really annoy me in Limited.
But what could be a good mythic? I mean, not good, but, you know, a good feel-bad mythic.
Well, so this is Iconic, right? This is more Iconic than Iconic Masters. This is like them fixing the silly problems they have with Iconic. So Survival of the Fittest. Right, that is a strong mythic to put in this set.
Ooh.
Like, how many printings has that card had now?
It had a judge foil, it had a normal printing, I think, and that's it.
Because the card is worth nothing on Modo.
Yeah, even I have it on Modo.
Oh, wow, it's $50 in paper.
Yeah, and it's not legal in Legacy.
Yeah, yes, it's banned in Legacy, it's definitely a Commander card.
Yeah.
Like, we play it in one-ticket Commander because it's worth cards on Modo. And the judge foils are selling at $300, and the non-judges are $50. So Survival of the Fittest is a card that is... It's so part of Magic's history, isn't it? Because it's so busted.
Yeah.
It's banned in Legacy, which normally tells you something about how good a card is. So there you go. There's my shoehorn for a mythic they could also put in that would be cool to open. It's cool and limited as well, to guard your crappy 0/2 wall to go find your, like, mythic bomb, like Broodmate Dragon.
That would be, by the way, a feel-bad mythic. Something like Dragon Broodmother or things like that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, what's the spider? The mythic spider from Commander. That makes spiders every turn.
Dragon Lair or Spider.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that'd be great. In Limited, you win your draft. But
yeah.
Afterwards, you're like, wow, this is like a $2. What's it called? The card called?
I think it's Dragon Lair Spider.
Yeah, there's.
Dragon Lair. I'm checking, it's not like a $20 card.
Oh, no, it's not. Definitely.
It is 19 pence.
Yeah, it's been printed in Conspiracy 2, I think, again.
Yeah, you're right. It's printed in, I don't remember how you said something. Plane Chase. Conspiracy, yep. Plane Chase, Commander's Arsenal. Yeah. That was Commander's Arsenal? God, that must feel bad.
The whole product made me feel bad because nobody could get it.
And this is the only foil version of that card, I guess. But that's another one where, yeah, great, but in reality, you're pissed off afterwards because you can't sell it for anything and you paid $10 for that pack.
But yeah, anything else we need to say about Master 25?
So, do you guys think another Walker needs... You've got Jace the Mind Sculptor. Do we need another Liliana the Valiant?
Well, actually, another Liliana would be really nice.
I think it's needed. They might save it for Modern Masters 2. Eternal Masters 2.
What about Ugin?
Yep, that is... or Khan. Both Ugin and Khan. But Khan's about to come back in Dominaria. So I imagine they might save the opening of him for Modern Masters 4? Okay, so Ugin or Jace, that would work. And what are your hedges on the art? So when they revealed it at the Pro Tour, there was three packs, wasn't there? There was Jace, Azusa, and some unknown art.
Yeah, that unknown art, it's bugging me. I just can't. Oh, maybe it's Platinum Imperium.
So, yeah, that is a good shout. So Platinum Imperium, because he's chunky, he's obviously kind of platinum-coloured. Like, I was saying still Overseer, but we were talking before the podcast, weren't we? And you were saying, Nicholas, that he's too chunky to be Overseer.
Yeah.
And then Igor jokes that it could be Arcbound Overseer. That's a feel-bad rare, isn't it?
No, let's bump it to Mythic.
Can you imagine you draft, you open your first pack, you pick Arcbound Overseer. Next pack, you pick Arcbound Overseer. Third pack, you pick Arcbound Overseer. It'd be kind of sick to have three Arcbound Overseer deck, but you'd be so annoyed at the low cost.
Next thing we want to touch about, I think, is going to be the last duel decks ever, for the time being. Maybe.
Until they bring them back.
Because they backed down on everything they said that.
So, do you think they will bring it back?
Well, they're bringing back event decks, so yeah, they'll probably bring back duel decks.
So, they're bringing back. So, have they announced they're bringing back event decks?
Challenger decks.
Challenger decks. Because they're like separate into two different decks, aren't they? Or three different decks or some nonsense.
They say they're going to be highly competitive.
So, in a couple of years, they're going to have fighting decks, I guess. Eldrazi versus something. It's not dual decks, it's just different. I'm going to wager on that.
So, I've already complained today about WotC not managing card prices correctly, but they have backed down on the nonsense around FNM promos. They've said, actually, you know what, we're wrong. Let's give you FNM promos back.
Bitching pays off.
Exactly. So they are acknowledging when they make mistakes, and they are looking to try and fix this. Is anyone really mad that dual decks are going?
No, because nobody's buying them. So from that point, I can actually see why they're discontinuing it.
The thing is, though, are the sales figures down? Do we know that for definite?
About dual decks, the thing is, I've always seen people say that you can find them anywhere.
Yeah, they're always available. Yeah, you are right. Yeah. You are. But that's the thing. So you were already annoyed earlier about the fact that Commander Arsenal was never available, right?
Yep.
But then when dual decks are available in every shop, that's a point against them? Is that a good thing? Is that a good thing that any new player can walk in and buy two themed decks? They can play against each other. They don't necessarily tie into standard because they get cool older cards and teach them about a bit of the history of the game. Is that not a good thing?
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that nobody was buying them, so they were watching them from a business standpoint.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I don't know if we definitely know that they're not selling, but if they've said that, they've said that.
They just need to improve them, not discontinue. Yeah. Because the
Elspeth versus Tezzeret sold out really good. Because yeah, they had really good cards in it.
So there were certain ones that did. So I will never forget when, what was it? Which one was it? It was the goal. No, it was Jace Architect of Thought versus Vraska the Unseen. So Jace versus Vraska, 2014.
Yeah.
And that deck, like I bought three of them and won a fourth one at FNM because I needed four Jace Architect of Thought for standard for my Esper control list. And I needed four Remand to play Delver in modern.
Yeah.
So sometimes they get it very, very right, but other times not so much.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, Elspeth versus the Tezzeret, you had things like Path to Exile, which hasn't been printed in a long while.
Not Path to Exile, it had the Swords to Plowshares.
Swords to Plowshares. Path to Exile was in Koth versus Venser.
Yes.
Unique art. And the unique art was really favourable because that particular Path to Exile showed a plated Geopede getting wrecked. And the reason that was flavorful was because Plated Geopede was in the same standard as Path to Exile back before Jace was printed, Jace the Mind Sculptor, back when John was playing against Mono White when they had Honor of the Pure and stuff. So that art is really flavorful. And yeah. So sometimes, again, they get it really right. They hit all the notes for collectors and Vorthoses and competitive players.
Yeah, they just need to amp things up and I think they will be selling more. Because the last couple were really,
lackluster.
Well, so they haven't really hit correctly since Jace versus Vraska. So I'm looking at the list now. You've got Speed versus Cunning. Was that exciting? Was anyone excited for that?
I was happy for Arcanist new art, but that's about it.
But the old art's cool.
It is, but this one was also cool. I have both versions. Don't worry.
And then after that, you had Elspeth versus Kiora, which, to be honest, gave you two standard legal planeswalkers, including Sun's Champion, which was the staple. Yes. Yes. It was late in the life cycle of that standard, but that was pretty good. And then after that, you had Zendikar versus Eldrazi, Blessed versus Cursed, Nissus versus Obnixilus, Mine versus Might. And then the last one I thought was probably the best one for about a year and a half, which was like giving us loads of Merfolk staples.
Mm-hmm.
Like Master of Waves. What else was in there? War and Instigator of Goblins. What else? What else was in there?
There was a bunch of cool things that I can't remember. Mara
Regery?
Yeah.
But again, I guess they're only giving you one copy. So in reality, if you want to play Modern Merfolk, you need to buy four copies of the event that your deck isn't good, is it? Pretty
but, much. Yeah. But what do we have actually in this one? The last one, Elves versus Inventors.
So, we have two cards spoiled, right?
Yes. Three, basically. Four.
Three?
More.
Oh no, there's more than that. I'm just looking. There's actually more than that. We have Elvish Archdruid, Azuri Renegade Leader, Regal Force, and Sylvan Advocate for the Elf deck.
Yes.
And then for the Inventor deck, we have Goblin Welder, Solemn Simulacrum, Thopter Assembly, and Shivan Reef.
I'm really happy that Goblin Welder is getting another.
Yeah, definitely.
That like, card is stupidly powerful.
And the card deserves some better art as well. The old art's not bad, but it's not quite.
I love the old art. It's wonky.
But Solemn Simulacrum is still like a $4 or $5 card, isn't it?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Because EDH.
Exactly. So for Commander players, another product with another Solemn, we don't know what the art for that will be yet.
Is the Solemn getting a new art?
We don't know. We don't know. We just know that it's going to be in the deck, but we haven't seen any art for it.
I'm going to guess that it's still going to have the same old art.
Well, so according to Salvation's wiki on the mtggamepedia.com, it does say that Elvish Archdruid and Thopter Assembly will feature new artwork.
Yes.
So and that's kind of cool.
And we see the art, actually, in the article.
Was it in the article? Was it? Okay.
Yeah, Thopter Assembly got the new Kaladesh-style art.
Oh, okay, that's cool, that's cool.
And the other Charge Druid has gotten new cool Zendikari like art.
No, that's I've just looked at that. That is so Mirrodin. If you look behind it, all the trees are made up like metallic scales. Uh-huh. And they're twirling around him, and like the lines are glowing with green energy. He's inside the Tree of Tales. That is very, very, very
I was focusing more on him. He looks really Zendikar-y.
Okay, okay. No, he's definitely... He is a Eldritch Archdruid working for Azuri, without a doubt.
Yeah, makes total sense.
But then we've got the fact that we've seen Azuri's art, haven't we? But they've said that they're doing something new with the card, and that's why they haven't spoiled it properly yet.
Yes, and that's the now the question is, what are they doing? There's a bunch of theories going around.
So what I was saying earlier is I believe, so something I saw earlier on Facebook, a friend of mine said that he thinks they're going to retemplate the regenerate mechanic, because apparently it needs retemplating, apparently. You can pay attention to that. But the other thing that I read on Twitter from Uwen Irvin, I think it was saying that the template, the border might change. They might do new borders specifically unique to legendary creatures.
I think that's more possible because they stated that they just want to get away from regenerate.
Yep.
That's why.
But he has regenerate on him, so he does. How can they change that then?
No, they're not going to change anything. They're just going forward with standard sets. They're not going to feature regeneration ever.
Yep.
And they're never going to reprint any card that said something along the lines, can't be regenerated.
So yeah. you heard it here first, kids. Buy your Thrones now.
They're not going to print it in a standard legal set, is what things should
say. Yeah, so there you go. M25 Thrun. There you go. There's my calling.
Wouldn't be surprised about that, actually.
Yeah, he's quite a unique and important character to the mythos of magic, so...
And really popular, just, you know, for cubes and stuff.
So the question is, do you want the new legendaries to have, like, borderless art? Do we want them to look like unstable lands?
Borderless art is actually almost... I mean, if we're talking the style for the unstable lands...
Yes.
Yes, but with a text box, of course.
I don't know. I think that style is reserved for those lands.
Mm-hmm.
Just to make them even more special.
And so do you reckon we might get some sort of like almost like invention style border?
That would be great.
Maybe just extended art, you know, like the promos for the game days.
Yeah, yeah. Or like walkers. Walkers have the extended art as well, don't they?
Yes.
Or just make something cool with the border. I don't know.
Something we didn't mention was that every single M25 card will have the watermark of the set that it was from.
Mm-hmm.
So if you open a foil Azusa, it will have a Kamigawa foil watermark, which for collectors and some sort of pimping out people for EDH and old Eternal formats, like myself, I wouldn't have foil EMA Deathlight Shamans because they don't have the correct watermark. But if you have a foil Deathlight Shaman from the original set, you get the Golgari watermark. So the M25 cards will have that watermark where Jace doesn't. And Planeswalkers won't. So that's interesting as well, I thought. The fact that we can open up a foil Azusa with a foil Kamigawa watermark, which makes that card unique even to the judge foil.
And that'll make it more relevant if you're playing with unstable cards that actually look at your watermark.
Yeah, you're right. And obviously Commander, all the silver border cards are legal now.
They're not anymore, but...
Wait, what? Have they banned the silver border cards already?
January 15th.
Yeah, so they unbanned them at Christmas?
Yes, a bit earlier.
But they
and
also
then reban them by January 15th.
Well, yeah, they stated that they'll unban them till the next ban.
I'm sorry, guys. I did not know. I feel so sorry for you. Sorry. I feel sorry for all Commander players.
Nyxia is the biggest victim here, I think.
Oh, no. We decided in our playgroup that we're fine with most of the cards because they're actually quite balanced. For instance,
For instance,
I opened the foil Sword of Dungeons and Dragons, and I'm going to play it. Going to play it. Because I have all the swords, so it fits.
So I have a mini cube, as it's called, which is like a cube environment where everyone plays from the same deck. It's a big game of Commander from one deck. And in there, I've got like four copies of the Very Cryptic Command, and like Sword of Dungeons and Dragons, and Urza Planeswalker, and all these sort of cards. Because some of those cards are really fun to have in a Commander style format. So I always thought they should always keep that like, the legendaries all legal. And so, like, there's one of the scrap elementals that makes a lot of 1/1 goblins. It literally says roll 2d6 and make that number of goblins. That card is sweet. Like, it's really fun and random. And not at all unbalanced, really. So, yeah, I always thought they should keep some of them legal, but I'm pretty shocked that they made them legal in... When was the legality? Was that October then? November?
Beginning of December. It began and it ended with January 15th.
So it was a month and 2 weeks?
Yes, something like that.
Oh, that is a shame. That is a shame.
I mean, it's good for Commander overall. I would just be like, I wouldn't even make it legal officially. I would just say, if you guys want to play, talk with your playgroup.
Yeah, exactly. I think unstable cards should be legal, and then just don't make the bloody unglued and unhinged cards, because there's a lot of really bad cards in amongst those.
Yeah. But anyway, that's it about the whole dual deck thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing more to cover, right? We've covered the reprints, the art, and the possible new changes to Azuri.
Yep.
Are you sad to see the deck go?
Am I sad to?
Are you sad to see the dual decks go?
Me personally, no, because I never bought a single one, I think, so I wasn't the market.
Yeah.
In some ways I am, because there was a period where I bought quite a few of them. Like, my now wife bought me, like, Chandra versus Jace. What year was that?
That was a good one.
Yeah.
What was it? 12?
That was... I'm just looking at the list now. 2008.
Oh my god.
That was 10 years ago. So yeah, that was one of the first presents I got from my now wife. And the thing is, I got... This is a very small anecdote. I got that deck, right? Took it to my nephew's house to teach him to play Magic. I opened the packs up and got ready to sleeve them. And then I got two blue decks. One copy of Jace, one copy of Chandra. I got two copies of the blue deck for some reason.
I see no problem.
No problem. I got four copies of Counterspell with the Jace art. I got two copies of Ancestor's Revisions or Ancestor's whatever, Recall, whatever it's called. So that was cool, but it was frustrating to try and teach my nephew, who was like 12, to play with two blue decks. Because he thought Magic was all about counter stuff, you know?
That's a good way to raise a kid.
Yeah, exactly. So he got into Magic like deep, as opposed to, you know. But then the next thing I knew, he bought Knights versus Dragons?
Dragons, yes.
A couple of years later, and he was like, yeah, my favorite card is this. There's like some random dragon that was a 5/5 for 10 mana.
Better than Hellkite.
Yeah. Oh, no, but God, Hellkite is sick. That card's great.
He's awesome.
Another card that's busted when you pair it with Ditto Navigator, to go on to that theme again.
Or, hey, Dragonstorm.
Some people might think Ditto Navigator is busted. Who knows?
Kids remember following words. In response to trigger. And that's all you need.
But then, yeah, they try and kill it, and then they bounce it a couple more times, put six triggers on the stack, and then you've got, like, 30 damage there.
In response to the Soulbound trigger.
Oh, yes. I apologize, of course, the Soulbound.
Yeah. People often forget about that, and that's why this thing...
Because in EDH, you're normally at the bar getting a beer, or you've gone to the fridge, or, you know, you're chatting about, like, how people's lives are with your mates, and then before you know it, everything's Soulbound, and, like, the game is over.
You see, that's why you kill people's lands, so they don't have to focus on the game, and they can talk about life.
Exactly. I agree with you there, Igor. I agree with you.
So, the final thing we want to talk about, since you're a big modern aficionado, was the Pro Tour results.
Oh, yes.
It was a really entertaining Pro Tour. I watched actually most of the coverage, and I'm not a modern player, so that tells you something.
Yeah, I think that Pro Tour was a lot more fun to watch than the last couple of standard ones, where you're watching Energy Mirrors.
Yeah, but they shouldn't make, you know, modern more than one.
No, I agree, because it threatens the format, because as we saw with Eldrazi Winter, that let the cat out of the bag, and we had a couple of really bad GPs before they emergency banned all the Eldrazi cards. So, yeah, and I mean, I was scared going into this Pro Tour. I was really scared that Modern was going to get revealed to be a really busted format where there was obviously a much better deck than everything else that needed to be banned, and it would carry on with the reputation that it currently kind of garnered a little bit because of the last Pro Tour. But the whole format was really generally quite varied, apart from obviously there were, like, you know, 5 to 7 decks that showed up a lot. And it was just fun. Like, there was fun matches to watch. Like, Reed Duke made it into the top 8 with, like, an Abzan mid-range deck. And, like, I've lost the tab now. I had the quote earlier. On this Channel Fireball write-up of it that he put up today or yesterday, he said, in a format so wide and so varied as Modern, why would you go in and play with cards that you don't know when you can just go in and play with cards that you enjoy? And that, in many ways, to me, epitomizes what Magic is about, right? You play the formats that you like with the cards that you like.
Yeah.
You don't go in and just go, oh, I'm going to try and spike this tournament with, like, this random deck that's well-positioned. A good format will let you play the cards that you... And that's kind of why Eternal formats are so much fun, and non-rotating formats are so much fun, and Commander is so much fun, because you can play the cards that you really enjoy.
Yeah.
So from that standpoint, it was good. It was a great Pro Tour.
Only thing I gotta complain about Reduke is that he didn't play any Path to Exile deck, and he was playing white.
So, I mean, that's probably testament to how good Push is.
Yes.
So he played 4 Push and 2 Abruptic.
And, like, and that, no Path to Exile is main or his.
Yes. And
exactly.
And the Hollow Boys were really up and about for that.
Say again, sorry?
All the Hollow Boys, aka the Hollowed Ones, really happy that he didn't.
Yes, I mean, if he had Hollowed One Black Red Hearthstone deck on his radar, then Path to Exile would definitely have been a consideration for 75. Or if he thought Dredge was worth worrying about, Path to Exile would be
a consideration. It actually was a thing that people were preparing about, but
definitely existed, but I probably didn't give a shit about it. Like, it wasn't that much of an issue.
I mean, yeah, if he had his eyes on those kind of decks, but why wasn't he wary of Tron? Because Wyrmcoils just completely demolished the deck.
So the argument is for Abzan and Jund is that you just sometimes have to go, you know what, I lose to Tron and Scapeshift, and that's that. And then you can have a 50% or better matchup against everything else in the field, pretty much. And he's got 3 Fulminator Mages in his sideboard, so he definitely was eyeing up beating Tron. And, like, you can duress, like, parts of Tron away as well, like the payoff cards, like the Planeswalkers and things. So, 1 duress, 3 Fulminator Mages, and then let's just do it, right? And Stony Silence is quite good against Tron. Like, Stony Silence is one of the weirdest cards to try and play against Tron because you have to have it early to stop the maps and stuff. But if you're playing later, when they've got a Karn in play, it's the worst card ever. Like, when they're top decking 7 mana bombs and slamming them, and you're top decking 2 mana enchantments that do nothing, it's not a good place to be. But yeah, so you are right. Like, Tron is a scary matchup, but I guess he just thought, you know what? Let's go in, play the cards I enjoy. Like, he played a one of Tyler's Tracker. Reed Duke was my hero. Him and Manguchi were my heroes in that top 8. They were the ones I wanted to see do well. Because Manguchi was playing the Humans list with the Kithian in the main board. What a guy. I love a bit of Manguchi.
Speaking of, didn't you destroy your hero just like a day ago?
Yeah, so like Manguchi's been a bit of a running joke on the channel because like at GP Prague last year, was it? Legacy? I placed slightly above him, but we both missed cash. So I made a joke that I'm obviously better than Manguchi because I positioned better than him 1 GP and I'm basically pro now. And then, yeah, last week I was playing a lot of Mono Red Stompy and Legacy. I was getting ready for a video for it, but in the end didn't make it. And I played against Manguchi because I didn't know his Mono name. So he put up a Channel Fireball video and he played against me and my hands were just infinitely better than his. And I was just slamming Chandra Torch Defiances while he was like playing Chalices on 1. And I was just blowing up his stuff and killing him, and it was great. So yeah, I guess the words are wrecked him. Not because he's a bad player, but like my hands were way better than his in both games. So yeah, that was fun. Because when people messaged me going, oh, by the way, Vince, you're on the latest Channel Fireball Manguchi video. I was like, oh, sweet. I expected that I lost. And then when I watched the video and I won, I was like, yes! Take that!
But back to the topic at hand, what was the top 8?
So the top 8 was, you had obviously 8 players, you had Lantern Control, Mardu Pyromancer, Blue-Red Pyromancer, Black-Red Hollow One, 2 variants of 5 color humans, Reed Duke on Abzan, and Traverse Shadow List, which was the most boring deck other than Lantern in that top 8. Because it's playing Traverse the Uvenwall, but you can't search for anything exciting. So why play the card? It's just Death Shadows and Goyfs, and yes, Grim Flayer is kind of cool, and 1 copy Snappy. But yeah, you're not searching for, like, you know, silver bullets. When you're playing Green Suns of Traverse, in my opinion, you have to play, like, you know, Master of the Wild Hunt and Cresselia Pride Mage and other cool cards like that. But that's just my opinion, man, you know?
But all in all, seems like a really diverse top 8.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the argument is there's a lot of creature-based decks and not a lot of combo. But that doesn't upset me. I'd gone, before the Pro Tour, I'd put in my like group chats with my mates, I'd said, I bet there's going to be a good showing of Storm, and by association, a good showing of D&T, because they can prey on Storm. And I was wrong. Storm did okay, but its conversion rate wasn't as high as I expected. And I guess Storm loses quite badly to 5 color humans, as we've seen, when they name Grape Shot or Empty the Warrens with the Meddling Mages, so...
the 5-color humans was the deck everybody was afraid about.
And rightfully so, the deck is incredibly powerful. It's like Merfolk on crack, and it actually has disruption like Thalia's and Meddling Mages. So, yeah, and got itself free booty man.
But
most of the time when I was seeing it, they were really close to victory and just always failing to make that one last push.
Yep.
Well, I guess that's the problem we have with most aggro decks, right? They can run out of gas. And those decks have no way to draw more gas. I've seen variants that have played like a couple of Dark Confidant and stuff, but those versions never seem to top 8, so...
Yeah, that's why I wanted to say that, unlike Merfolk, these can actually run out of gas quite.
Like, Javier Dominguez, if I'm butchering his name, the other humans player that wasn't Mengucci, he played one copy of Kessig Malcontents.
That was brilliant.
Yeah, like, doming people. I don't think I saw any of the camera matches where he domed anyone, so I don't know if he did it on camera, because I didn't watch as much of the coverage as I wish I did. But that card is sick. Like a 3-mana 3/1 that just shoots them for like anywhere upwards of 4 damage is good in my book.
Yeah, when that was first shown on the camera, I was like, okay, just give me a second. Went to the Avis and restored the spoilers and just let's see what we can play. We can play this and this and this, all the bad draft cards.
I mean, I'm not quite sure whether or not Phantasmal Image is like an innovation for Mengucci and Javier as well. Javier. So Javier, like, I've not seen Phantasmal Image in the human decks before, or I haven't noticed it when I played it online. So is that like a new thing? Are people playing Phantasmal Image because it just copies Meddling Mage or Champion?
I think it's newish.
I mean, it seems sweet. It gives you, I mean, you've got 8, because let's be honest, like, Humans was a laughable deck up until about 6 to 8 months ago. So like, you had the 5 color tribal decks like Slivers, and allies, but they were always tier 2 at the very best, and normally tier 3. And out of nowhere, there's a YouTube channel called Magic Aids. He made a video about 5 color humans, and he like went 5-0 in his things. And that's when his name escapes me because I've drunk a bottle of wine. The guy who won the Star City Open with humans, who was that?
Yeah, I know who you mean, but I have no idea of the name.
I will tell you in 2 seconds because I made a video about him. I'm just a bit pissed. What was his name? I'll find it as I'm talking. My point is, the deck was like non-existent and then came out of nowhere and just like exploded onto the scene, right?
So, basically, Ixalan pushed it, right? With Unclaimed Territory.
Territory and the Freebooters.
And Freebooters, because Freebooters were a good combo matchup. Even before the deck, if it weren't for Thalia's Lieutenant, because it gave it like a really powerful Lord effect that also was a threat on its own. And then the set before that, Reflector Mage. So it had every single set, it's had like a new toy. And I guess Phantasmal Image allows you to have 8 copies of Freebooter, 8 copies of Lieutenant, 8 copies of Reflector Mage, and therefore really push the deck to being like very efficient.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, Phantasmal Image is a really good card if you have a lot of actually copy.
And to go back to the point I said earlier, it's Collins Mullen. That's the one.
Yeah.
I can picture it. I can hear what's his face in this tour saying his name. I can hear it now.
Cedric Phillips or
Cedric Phillips, Patrick Sullivan. I can hear them saying his name and being confused as to how he's on like 13-1 or whatever it was.
And then the Meddling Mage.
If he names Meddling, if he names Grave, game over. And it was. Yeah. So yeah, so Humans is just like this huge breakout deck. And it's funny because like Death Shadow has been making the rounds for about 6 months now of like making people feel very uneasy. And then boom, 5 color humans rocks up and like, whoa, only 3 months to go, but here we are, two lots of us in the top 8 of the portal. That's impressive.
Yeah, it's a legit deck now.
But the other interesting thing is that we've had 2 Pyromancer decks in the top 8. And Pyromancer has been an absolute staple in Legacy and even Vintage for a long time. And, like, Grixis Delver, using Pyromancer in Legacy is probably one of the best decks right now. But Pyromancer's always been in and out of popularity in Modern. But then we have Pro Tour, we have Mardu Pyromancer and Blue Red Pyromancer, which both functioned very, very differently. I mean, the main thing for Mardu Pyromancer is that, Bedlam Reveler is a card, because it's basically Treasure Cruise with a body, because that card is legitimately nuts. But I think that's really exciting and different as well. We see that Pyromancer is as good as everyone thought it was, just no one's really played it enough.
Cool card. I even tried it in my experiments with Grixis Land Destruction. Young Pyromancer is really good when you have, what's it called? Smallpox. Smallpox and you know that...
Yeah.
Sorcery from Kamigawa for 1 red, each player sacrifices a permanent.
Yeah, because you get the token, it triggers, it resolves, and you sack that. Yeah, definitely. Is that Commander you're playing that in?
No. I was experimenting in modern.
Modern, okay. Because historically, like, young pyromancer with Kabalthe, because Kabalthe is one black, name a card in their hand, they discard it. So you blind name first off, and trigger, get a 1/1. And then you miss sometimes, because not everyone's playing Force of Will, which is the card that you always blind name with Cabal Therapy.
Always.
And then you sack the 1/1 to Cabal Therapy, get another 1/1, and then name the card they got two of, whether it be, I don't know, Thalia or whatever, and just absolutely rip their hand to shreds. And sometimes when you hit on the first Cabal Therapy, and then flash it back and hit again, like, that is an insurmountable hill to climb up when they've got a Pyro and a 1/1 in play as well. So yeah, like, Pyro alongside, like, those sort of Pox sort of effects is nuts. So maybe onto something there, Nikos, if you play alongside, like, Smallpox and things.
Yeah, I'll work on it when...
It's got a cool name as well, Pyropox.
Pyropox.
And that's, like, that's half the battle for a modern deck, is just making the name.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I guess Nixon needs to make a list and send it to you so you can make it famous.
Yeah, exactly. I can meme it up. We can buy our copies of Smallpox now and hope it spikes in price.
To like $1, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the upper ceiling. The floor would be an increase of price by a couple of pennies, but you never know. The Pro Tour was sweet, but I'm glad that they do it now and again.
Yeah, and the next Pro Tour is also modern as well, right?
What's the modern?
Pro Tour 25.
Yeah, so I think there's a historic for it, aren't they? I mean, I wouldn't mind Legacy Pro Tour at some point, just one.
Well,
just
it
one,
is
one,
Legacy.
You know?
Pro Tour 25 will be Modern and Legacy.
Yes. Is it Modern and Legacy?
Yeah. And they said there will be one other side event that they're not ready to reveal yet.
Vintage.
Cube.
Vintage. Give me Vintage. It's not going to be Vintage, I know, but I really want to see it.
I just really like the fact that they are taking some time to appreciate these older, more, and sometimes interesting or intricate formats, you know? Well, if you did like a 1v1 competitive command Pro Tour as a one-off, can you imagine that?
I don't want to, honestly.
No? Would you not like that?
No, I wouldn't want, because I don't like 1v1 as thing, honestly, as commander.
I guess you can't dirtle in 1v1 commander.
Not really.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
I can appreciate that.
The ban lists are a bit different and all that. Although, in favor of 1v1, it has braids unbanned, so you know.
Oh, there's a lot of talk of stacks tonight, isn't there?
The thing is, braids isn't even that bad anymore.
Oh, we're talking about blue braids or black braids?
Oh, black braids, of course.
The stacks one, yeah, okay.
The psych one, yes.
The fun one.
Oh, definitely, but in commander-wise, it's not even that OP anymore because you don't have the partial pairs shuffle anymore.
How does that stop stacks from being degenerate and oppressive?
With partial parries, you could have kept the hand with a couple of lands, the Sol Ring, and have braids. Then it was degenerate.
Right, I see. So the consistency of getting to cast
yes,
but too
these,
early.
Yeah, but these days you can't do that anymore because you have the Vancouver mulligan.
Right, I'm with you, okay.
So I would unban it, honestly, but that's just me.
Yeah, that's just you who's playing Armageddon.
But yeah, in my 99, it wouldn't be... I actually tested it. It wasn't the most broken thing ever.
I did it... Yeah, so not broken, sure, but is it fun?
I'm playing with people who, you know, play a bunch of infinite combos, Kiki Jiki's, Palancron...
That was one of my favorite commander decks. I used to play Niv-Mizzet. I'll just play every combo you could possibly get. So there'd be Splinter Twin Kiki, Zealous Persecution... Zealous Conscript, sorry, Pestermite, Exarch, and then I'll play like Niv-Mizzet, Curiosity, Ophidian Eye. Then I'll play like Show and Tell, Emrakul, like before she was banned. Like I'll play every possible combo you could in blue-red, and it was fun.
For me,
anyway.
Because players like you, I have to come step in and make sure that everybody has fun. So there is just one spell per turn, nobody can search their libraries. We're playing a normal game of Magic.
I love a bit of that as well. A bit of, 100... Let's do this.
See, just fair magic. Nothing unfair here.
I bought a foil Glow Strider at a GP recently, so I could be like, foil Thalia, foil Wingmare, foil Glow Strider. I just need a foil Sphere of Resistance and a foil Thorn of Amethyst, but I'm imagining the prices on those are obscene.
Oh, yeah, they are.
I must say that you reminded me, talking about the Master of the Wild Hunt, that I really want to get a playset of those, or at least two of them. I could really use them for modern.
Yeah, I think they're probably at least
to try them out, see if it works.
Well, the mid-range decks always have a space for card, right? Like whether it be Master of the Wild Hunt, or it be Master of what's the flippy one?
Hunt Master of the Fells.
Ravager of the Fells and Master of whatever it's called, or Olivia and stuff. But a card that makes you a 2/2 every single turn and then gets them to fight. I mean, that card is really good.
I'm sorry, did you say they're good in mid-range decks?
That's not what
I had in mind.
What did you have in mind?
Well, Mono Green Trono.
Oh, right. Can we talk about this very briefly? Because I was listening to the last podcast, and you're talking about your Mono Green Waltron?
Yeah. So, you also asked me about the results for my league.
Yeah, so how did you get... Where are you at the moment with that?
So the league finished. I'll talk about that too. So most of the league, I was playing with Eldrazi Tron.
So boring Tron.
Yeah, most of it. But when people started, when more than just me started playing Eldrazi Tron, I was kind of like, "Wow, this deck is such bullshit!" And the mirrors were extremely stupid because. Either one side will be completely, demolished by some, turn two Thought Nazi or something like that. It was just not fun, really.
Thought Nazi is the epitome of fun. I'm obviously being incredibly sarcastic. Like, as good as the card is.
So I just.
When it hits the field and you have a removal spell in hand, it feels very bad.
So I just decided to make two versions of similar decks. So I made a mono red Eldrazi. And I decided to go for a mono green Tron. So the temples go in the mono red one and the Tron goes in the mono green. And when I started playing mono green, I remember I was watching, on the MTG Goldfish channel. He was doing some, goat magic, like the old cloud 12 post versus the Eldrazi Winter Tron with the eye. So they were seeing which was more busted. And of course, Cloud Post is just infinitely better than I or anything like that.
Yeah, Cloud Post is ridiculous.
It wasn't even a contest. And I saw that Cloud Post actually ran the Overgrown Battlement and Wall of Roots as another like mana source because they're really good at if paired up. So I thought
that was Wall of Roots and Overgrown Battlement, is that correct? Yeah,
because on turn 2 you get Overgrown Battlement. On turn 3, you put Wall of Roots, and you basically still have 4 mana for that turn.
Yeah.
And the next turn, you drop your 4th land, you have 7 mana. So that's Tron mana without the Tron. And you can still have a Tron as a backup for Tron mana.
Yeah, so your consistency on hitting 7 mana
is higher. It also gives you a more favorable matchup against aggro decks, because you have walls that defend you. And... but it does make your mid-range matchups a bit worse, but still.
But you said that people don't tend to kill the walls, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So what are your payoffs? You're playing Worldbreaker and like Planeswalkers and things?
So my payoffs are, in the deck I was playing at the time, I had Worldbreakers, I have one Karn, one Ugin, I have one Ulamog, and one Emrakul, the Promised End. And, of course, 3 Wyrmcore.
Right, okay.
And I had, I think, 3 Ballistas, because Ballistas are always
good. Yeah, definitely.
But as side decks in the deck, I also mainboarded 2 Ripjaw Raptors, because Ripjaw Raptors are stupid with Ballistas.
Yeah.
And I had a Garruk Relentless, who is, like, always good whenever you play him.
Garruk Relentless is one of those underplayed Planeswalkers in Modern. The card is not.
He is. And I remember, actually, that when I was playing Eldrazi Tron, I wasn't playing the usual list. I main decked 6 or 7 spot removals. So I had 3 Warping Whales, and I had 4 3 Warping Whales and 4 of those Spatial Contortion.
God, Warping Whale is such a good magic card.
And
It's Eldrazi Command, isn't it? It does everything.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just, it was just insane how many games I won because I ran spot removal in an Eldrazi deck. And so it stopped like everything. In Burn, it stops their sorcery speed, spikes. It also exiles their guys. The Spatial Contortion kills anything. It was really good magic cards, and I think
Warping Rail is an underplayed card in both. You see? Like, the amount of things it hits, I've seen. Like, when people, like, can't, you know, go off with elves and Nexi and cast Natural Order and just counter it with a Warping Rail, and they're like, what?
Yeah, because like, Warping Rail is an amazing card, and even if I possessed four, Chalice of the Void, I would not actually play them.
In modern Chalices. A well-positioned, should I say, as a...
I just don't like just maybe putting a card that does nothing. Even though the deck isn't really that interactive,
So where are you at in the... How are you doing?
The league. So, the league... last year's league ended with me in fifth place. And after that, we had, a Masters of Modern tournament where the top 20 league players were invited for, you know, five round Swiss and a top 8. And in that, I actually reached the finals where I lost to Merfolk.
Playing Green Tron or Eldrazi Tron?
Playing the Green Wall Tron, yeah.
Green Wall, sweet. You need to hit me up on the list so I can have a look at this, because generating lots of mana is something I like to do.
It is, and especially when players don't kill the walls, they should. It gets out of control really fast. I was meaning to make a list on Tapped Out for a few days now, but I just keep forgetting.
Yeah, make a list and get it to me. I'd love to have a closer look and maybe play it for some games.
So, I replaced the Ripjaw Raptors with Polukranos, because Polukranos is really good against Merfolk.
I almost played Polukranos in the slot that I played Master of the Wild Hunt in Nykvit.
Yeah.
Because I needed something that I could, like, kill multiple creatures with or sink mana into.
And that's why I want Master of the Wild Hunt. I wanted that card for many years now. I never found it anywhere within my local game shop, and I still want it. I just want to put it in.
Yeah, the card is legitimately good. Like, it's like a faction arena that draws you a grizzly bear every turn.
Pretty much. And this year's season, I'm still contemplating on what to play. I got almost all parts for Blue Steel, but... I'm thinking about, I'm going to spice it up with a Paradox Engine, because getting, like, a lot of mana out of Paradox Engine, your guys that tap for two colorless, and just a random mana rock, like the Astral Cornucopia.
Yeah, if you can cast a Paradox Engine and goes afterwards, things get very silly very quickly.
I just like to put in a Memnarch. And then Memnarch just comes and steals everything. And
yeah.
Paradox Engine. Even without Paradox Engine, it can be cast quite consistently with the blue steel deck.
So you're like me, you like to play commander cards in proper format.
Yeah. I mean,
because Memnarch is not a competitive card, is it? But if you get to cast and activate it, you're living the dream.
Yeah, and with blue steel, I believe I can do it. I just have to the deck and try it out. If not, I'll just go back to Green Tron, because, like you said, those are cards I enjoy playing, so I'll keep playing them.
Yeah, and that's the best way of Magic, without a doubt.
Yeah, that's why I love Modern so much, because I want to make every version of Monocolored Tron I can.
Yeah, it's something I've been planning to do for a while. I was thinking about when you were listening to last week's podcast, I was thinking, I need to get on to make Mono White Tron, because I've got a couple of versions of it. I was playing with a Secure the Wastes version with that new boat that flips from Ixalan, to call it Boat Tron. And the other version was Legendary Tron, where you play Thalia's Lancers that can set up a legendary card.
Yeah.
So you can search up Karns and Ugins and Elspeth Sun's Champions and other silly cards, as well as legendary creatures like, you know, Big Thalia and stuff, and then Vala. So that sounds like a fun way to go with Mono White Tron.
Yeah, and I had plans for Mono Blue Tron, Solemn Simulacrums to get my blue lands, and then sacrifice the Solemns to emerge that big Kraken thing.
Deep Fiend.
To just, you know, take an extra turn because you tap their lands.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like Blue Tron has always been a thing, like with the Mindslaver lock. Well, Elder Deep Fiend.
I would even
solid addition to that deck.
I wouldn't even go with Mindsliver luck because I don't have the academy. But I would go more like, you know, play expensive spells that you normally wouldn't, like overloading Cyclonic Rift and playing, you know, the 10 mana take 2 extra turns.
Yeah, time stretch.
Why not?
Let's just do it.
I just want to take extra turns with what can
Who doesn't want to take extra turns? Raise your hand. See? No one. No one doesn't want to take extra turns.
So, that's about it.
Yeah, right. That's part of my mission as well, is to play different colored mono.
Oh, and I really want to finish getting Aether Vials so I can try out creature strategy. And the first thing No. Generally, creature decks.
The first one I'm
going to try out is, Eldrazi and Taxes.
Yeah, deck is sweet. Wasteland Strangler and Thickwist together. Those are cards that I can get behind.
Yes, definitely. Also, I can play Swords. I love playing.
Yeah. Modern, they're a bit more clunky to get the deal. Swords are always good, even in, like, you know.
I actually remember way back in the day when I first started playing Modern, like, more, let's say, competitive. I was playing a mono-green Tron version. This is even before Eldrazi Winter ever happened. Yeah, it was way before the return to Zendikar. I played a mono-green Tron that had Nest Invaders. You know Nest Invaders?
Yeah. I mean, it's purple safe now, isn't it?
Nest Invaders, and I had a couple of Swords. And people just don't expect the 0/1 Scion to get a sword and start punching.
That was that's how I built my commander decks. It's like, is this card playable? Well, it carries a sword, so that makes it more playable than most spells.
Yeah.
And then I equip swords and stuff and hit people. I love Sword and Fire and Ice is again like one of my top cards. Like it.
Yep. I played
hitting only... someone with Sword and Fire and Ice is just such a satisfying feeling. Drawing a card, shooting something. It's very, very pure magic.
Especially when you equip that Sword of Fire and Ice on a Wormcoil Engine against Burn.
Man, put it on Mirroring Crusader and just hitting them for, like, literally a million damage and drawing two cards is...
So the two swords I would play are the Sword of Fire and Ice and Feast of Famine.
Yeah, Feast of Famine's alright. Like, untapping your lands, though, is just... Unless you've got, like, displaces, I think the mana into isn't that great. Like, Body and Mind is surprisingly good in constructing cards like 60-card formats, because you kill them so quickly and you make 2/2s they can't deal with. Light and Shadow is also really good, because it dodges a lot of removal, Fatal Push and Path, and you also get to All Swords Flash here, and you also get to get a creature back out your bin, so that the grind is real. Swords are good, to some extent, right? Like, they're all good.
Those are my plans for this Modern League.
Let me know how you get on.
Alright, boys, I think that's it for this show, right?
Definitely. It's been fun.
This did take a while, but it was fun. But Vince, got any info that you want to give to people? They can reach you.
Come follow me on Twitter at Pleasant Kenobi. Subscribe over on YouTube again, Pleasant Kenobi. Instagram, Pleasant Kenobi, and I'll be at GP Madrid in March. I'll be playing Legacy as part of a team. So if you want to come say hello, have a chat, then please do. And then after that, I'll be at GP London in May.
Sweet. Niksha, anything else you gotta add?
Nothing.
Well, you can find all and every of our contact info in the show notes, from the card sphere to Twitter, Facebook, etc., etc., etc. This has been the Yellow Dragon Doodle Podcast, episode 61, and as always, the Emperor protects.
And Tara War.
Goodbye!